Welcome to the Collaborative Psychiatry Podcast, where we help busy primary care providers build confidence in managing mental health. I'm Dr. Daniel Suter, a psychiatrist trained in general and addiction psychiatry, and currently working in collaborative and integrated care. I created this platform to make psychiatric education simple, practical, and genuinely useful for real-world medicine. Thanks to the support of our subscribers, this podcast remains completely free of commercial influence. Everything you hear reflects my own clinical experience and interpretation of the literature, no sponsorship or outside agendas. If you want to learn more about our mission, visit us at collaborative-psychiatry.org. We've got in-depth courses, clinical tools, and lots of other subscriber resources. These quick take episodes are designed to give you high-yield, evidence-based tools that you can start using right away in clinic. If you're interested in more in-depth learning, check out our full-length CME course on managing depression in primary care through our website. It's about an hour and a half long and covers everything from diagnosis to med selection, augmentation approaches, ketamine, and more. Lastly, if you find this quick take helpful, please don't forget to subscribe or leave a review, and check out our website for downloadable clinical tools and resources that will help you put the information you learn here into practice with your patients. Let's get into it. Today, we're going to talk about buprenorphine. Now, this is a truly massive topic, and we'll go much more in-depth on bup and how to use it to manage opiate use disorder in a future full-length course. But in this episode, I really want to focus in on one aspect of buprenorphine, and that is how it works and what it's doing at the receptor level. If you can understand what exactly is happening at the mu opioid receptor, it makes understanding everything else about buprenorphine, including dosing, initiation, etc., feel much more intuitive. In terms of our learning objectives, upon finishing this quick take, listeners will be able to 1. Differentiate between partial and full agonism at the mu opioid receptor, and explain how partial agonism contributes to buprenorphine's safety and reduced misuse potential. 2. Describe the clinical implications of buprenorphine's high receptor affinity, including its blocking effect on full agonist opioids. And 3, analyze the receptor level mechanism of precipitated withdrawal and identify the conditions under which it may occur. Obviously, the reason why we're talking about buprenorphine is because the opioid overdose epidemic continues to kill a staggering number of individuals each year. 2024 was actually the first year in many that we saw a decline in the number of deaths. The number dropped from 110,000 down to 80,000, which is a huge change, and a testament, I think, to the increased access to things like buprenorphine as well as other harm reduction services. The important thing to know about treating OUD is that out of all the substance use disorders that exist out here, it is the most responsive to pure pharmacologic interventions. The medications that we use to treat it, whether it's methadone or buprenorphine, as standalone treatments without any other interventions, are responsible for about 2/3 of the opiate use reduction that happens out there. Typically, we think of substance use disorders as needing dedicated treatment programs with lots of wraparound services as well as therapy. And that certainly helps in OUD, but I think with OUD, we're really in a special situation where the pharmacologic intervention alone can change someone's life. A lot of providers feel uncomfortable managing OUD, but what the data tells us is that if you see a patient who has OUD and do nothing more than prescribe them buprenorphine, which is a very safe medication, you could effectively treat their OUD and as a result, vastly improve or save their life. That's why I think it's an important topic for us to touch on here. Ever since the government got rid of the X waiver, any provider with a DEA can prescribe buprenorphine and help reduce the toll of the opioid epidemic. Now, the problem truly is just one of comfort and familiarity. There are some nuances to prescribing buprenorphine, and in many ways, it is a fast-evolving field. You've likely had some education on this in the past, but I think it's one of those areas where a good conceptual understanding of how it works can go a long way, and that's really what I want to hammer home today. Now, pharmacologically, buprenorphine is a high-affinity partial agonist of the mu opioid receptor. It does have some effects at other receptors as well, but I really want to focus on the mu receptor because understanding its effects there is the key to appropriate use of the medication. Those two terms we use to describe it, partial agonism and high affinity, are instrumental to understanding how this medication works. So first of all, it's a partial agonist of the mu opioid receptor. Conceptually, what this means is that it only partially activates the receptor. It's the only opioid, and it is classified as an opioid, that is currently prescribed with any real frequency that only partially activates that receptor. All the other opioids out there are full agonists, which means that they exert the full opioid effect. So heroin, oxycodone, Dilaudid, methadone, fentanyl, morphine, all opiates that we use in medicine today, and all of the ones that are commonly used recreationally, activate the receptor fully. That difference, that partial agonism or partial activation of the mu opioid receptor, is responsible for a lot of the clinical utility of buprenorphine. Because it is essentially a less strong opioid, that means that it has less risk of abuse. It's hard to really get high on buprenorphine. It's not impossible for someone with no other options and a lot of motivation, but generally speaking, people are going to turn to other full agonists first if that's what they're looking for. The other important point related to the partial agonism is that it makes it really hard for someone to overdose on buprenorphine, which renders it much safer than full agonist opioids. So even if you were to partially agonize or partially activate all of the opioid receptors in the brain, there's generally not enough total opioid receptor tone or activation to cause respiratory depression. So it's extremely unlikely that a patient could overdose on buprenorphine unless they combine it with other strong sedatives or have other significant risk factors. This is part of what's known as the quote-unquote ceiling effect of buprenorphine, where past a certain dose, typically that's 24 to 32 milligrams, you can assume that you have essentially all of the opioid receptors in the brain partially agonized, and higher doses won't exert much more of an effect because there just aren't any more receptors to hit. So these factors related to partial agonism are great, right? Because what it means is that we can just trust patients with this medication. They're not going to be trying to take more of it than prescribed because they can't really get high, and that ceiling effect means that taking higher doses won't really do anything for them anyway. Plus, we don't have to worry about overdose risk. And at the same time, because the mu receptor is still getting partially activated, it takes care of the brain's cravings for opioids, so the drive to turn to illicit opioids goes down. The partial agonism, then, is what makes buprenorphine such a safe medication. What makes it complicated is the next piece, which is its very high affinity for the mu opioid receptor. The affinity is the stickiness of the molecule to the receptor. And so bup is very sticky on that receptor. It likes to grab hold and not let go. This is super helpful because it means that once you have the buprenorphine molecule stuck on all the opioid receptors in the brain, it essentially blocks them from being activated by full agonist opioids with lower affinity. This is the quote-unquote blocking effect of buprenorphine, which is helpful because, again, it means that if someone is on buprenorphine and uses an opioid like heroin, oxycodone, etc., they won't get any effect because those heroin or oxycodone molecules will just float around in the brain but won't be able to actually bump the buprenorphine off of the receptor and cause any full activation. So then for the patient, why spend money buying and using opioids if they don't do anything? But the same factor, its very high affinity and the stickiness for that mu opioid receptor, is also responsible for why buprenorphine can be difficult to initiate. The crux of the issue here is that if you go directly from having all of your opioid receptors fully agonized or activated by an opioid like heroin, fentanyl, morphine, whatever, down to being partially agonized by buprenorphine, that difference between full and partial activation of the opioid receptors causes an acute withdrawal state. So the risk here is what's known as precipitated withdrawal. If someone is physiologically dependent on heroin, fentanyl, oxycodone, or any other full agonist opioid, That means their brain needs a constant supply of full agonism in order to avoid entering withdrawal, which, by the way, is a super important factor in driving ongoing use. So they keep using, not because they're getting much high anymore, but just to avoid going into withdrawal. If you're starting someone on methadone, it's a relatively straightforward transition from the street opioids to methadone because you're continuing to supply their brain with a full agonist, and you're actually providing more consistent coverage of those mu opioid receptors with full agonism because of the long half-life of methadone. However, if someone who is, again, physiologically dependent on full agonist opioids and has all their opioid receptors covered by heroin, fentanyl, whatever, and you give them a 2 mg starting dose of buprenorphine, because bup has a higher affinity for the receptor than most full agonists, it's going to go in there and essentially boot off or displace those full agonist molecules, replacing them all with partial agonism. And again, that sudden drop from full agonism to partial agonism causes an acute withdrawal state that can last for up to a day and it's very difficult to reverse. And unfortunately, patients who experience this will often swear off buprenorphine as a result, and in doing so, lose access to a potentially life-saving medication. Now, the flip side of this is that if you have someone who is already in opioid withdrawal, what that means by definition is that many of their opioid receptors are already sitting there empty, right? That's why they're in withdrawal. If you give them a 2 mg dose of buprenorphine at that point, they're going from empty mu opioid receptors to partially activated receptors, which actually treats their withdrawal and makes them feel better. It's that difference, right? The fact that bup can sometimes make withdrawal worse and sometimes treat withdrawal that I think confuses many people. And again, if you just think conceptually about what's happening at the receptor level in this way, I think it makes it much easier to understand. So, just to review before we wrap up, buprenorphine is a high affinity partial agonist at the mu receptor. That partial agonism is what makes this medication gold. It means it can't really be abused, and it's extremely unlikely to cause respiratory depression or overdose. At the same time, the high affinity of buprenorphine for the opioid receptor means that it will displace any other opiates that are hanging around the receptor and then hang on to that receptor itself for dear life and block it from other activation. If somebody's opioid receptors are used to having full agonists around, and then all of a sudden, all they have is partial agonists, that will place the individual into acute, or what we call precipitated withdrawal. Now we'll cover specific dosing strategies, including the standard approach to initiation, new protocols like low dose initiation, high dose initiation, long acting injectables, and more in our upcoming full audio course on buprenorphine. But with this conceptual understanding of how buprenorphine works in place, you'll already be ahead of the curve when it comes to thinking about how and when to initiate treatment. That's it for today's episode. Thanks so much for listening. Don't forget to check out the downloadable companion resources for this episode available on our website at collaborative-psychiatry.org/quicktakes. For a small subscription fee that will help keep us up and running, you'll get access to detailed show notes, a PDF reference sheet reviewing the content covered in this episode, a patient handout providing some education around buprenorphine and precipitated withdrawal, as well as a resource for patients and providers alike, detailing a standard approach to Suboxone initiation. If this episode made your work a little bit easier, please consider sharing it with a colleague or leaving a quick review on whatever podcast app you use most frequently. It really helps us reach more providers and spread this information more widely. And now our disclaimer. The content in this podcast is intended for general educational purposes only and does not constitute the practice of medicine or the establishment of a professional relationship. The use of the information in this podcast in clinical practice is at your own discretion and risk. Thanks again for joining us today, and we'll see you back here in 2 weeks when we'll discuss the use of psychiatric screeners in primary care to assist in diagnosing and conceptualizing patients.